Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. David Zeiger, Buster Cram, and Mike Mohoros have produced a new documentary about the war. Earlier, Zeiger produced that fine documentary on GI resistance to the Vietnam War, Sir, No Sir. New World Notes devoted a pair of installments to that film back in 2009. And you can hear them again, if you like, by visiting our show's archive. Back in the early 1970s, soldiers and veterans against the Vietnam War had some degree of prominence, and they had a lot of public support. Today, though, the American public is paying very little attention to this country's wars. Soldiers are worshipped in the abstract, but soldiers as individuals are pretty much ignored. Just as an example, suicides of soldiers and veterans are now at an all-time high level. In recent years, suicides of soldiers and veterans exceed combat deaths. That's a sign that something is very, very wrong. Wrong with the endless, unnecessary wars, wrong with the military, wrong with the Veterans Administration. But few civilians are even aware of the problem. Apparently fewer care. If the typical soldier remains in obscurity, soldiers and vets who have come to oppose the wars they had to fight are even more obscure. Turn on the TV and try to find one. In 2008, veterans of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan organized the Winter Soldier II hearings. Here they testified publicly about what they saw and did there. Here war crimes by U.S. forces were and are the order of the day. The veterans hope to inform the American public about the dirty reality of America's wars. They pretty much failed. The corporate media ignored them. Most Americans remained uninformed. Zeiger, Cram, and Mohoros made a documentary film. It focuses on a small handful of now anti-war veterans, and it climaxes with the 2008 Winter Soldier testimonies. Its title is This Is Where We Take Our Stand, and wonder of wonders, it's going to be shown on television, at least on some PBS stations, this January. Better late than never, I guess. It's an independent production, and your local PBS affiliate may or may not choose to show it. Personally, I'm not a TV watcher, but if you are, you might consider encouraging your PBS station to broadcast the documentary. Again, the name is This Is Where We Take Our Stand, and it's available in January. 6 short segments of the film have been available on the internet for a while, and we'll listen to parts of these today. We'll start off mixing and matching the voices of several veterans, and then we'll hear one segment complete. Here are some young veterans of America's wars in Iraq and Afghanistan sharing some of their experiences there.
But at the same time, there is something very, very empowering about telling your story, about finally standing up and saying, this is what I experienced, and I'm going to talk about it.
Day in the early summer of 2005, in the area of operation of the 42nd Infantry Division, there was a traffic control point shooting. What happened was a vehicle was driving very quickly towards a traffic control point. A young machine gunner made the split-second decision that that vehicle was a threat, and in less than a minute, put 200 rounds from his 50 caliber machine gun into that vehicle. That day, he killed a mother, a father, and 2 children. The boy was age 4, and the daughter was age 3. I was in the briefing that evening when it was briefed to the general. And after the officer in charge briefed it to the general in a very calm manner, Colonel Rochelle of the 42nd Infantry Division, DISCOM commander, turned in his chair to the entire division-level staff, and he said, and I quote, "If these f***ing Hajis learned to drive, this wouldn't happen."
First item, April 2004, free fire zone in the Abu Ghraib neighborhood. During Operation Blackjack, my troop was specifically instructed by our troop commander, a captain, that a particular sector we were moving to recon and force was now considered a free fire zone. I specifically recall him telling us that there were, quote, no friendlies in the area. And then he specifically said, quote, game on, all weapons free. My unit embraced the weapons-free order by firing indiscriminately into occupied civilian vehicles and at civilians themselves. The streets were littered with numerous human and animal corpses, not just men, but all manner of humanity. And this is what happens when a conventional force, such as the U.S. military, attacks a heavily populated urban area. They put us in a situation, you know, we're not bad people. You know, we were there because we thought it was the right thing to do. We were there because we thought we were going to make things better. We were there because we thought these people wanted us to be there. And then you show up and you realize that there's a whole bunch of people there that want to kill you. And guess what? They look just like the folks who don't want to kill you. So are you going to sort them out and figure it out? The only way to ensure your survival is to make sure that you put them in the dirt before they put you in the dirt, to put it bluntly. And I'm sorry to say that. That's part of us. That's the motivation. Guys who died for nothing. Guys who died for and guys who joined up and volunteered their lives to be taken like that for something that they thought was the ultimate, you know, the ultimate cause, the cause of protecting our country and protecting the people of our country. You know, I don't think anybody in this room or anybody who's been to Iraq gives a fuck about bringing freedom or whatever you want to call it to those over there. And that's another thing I struggle with is that, you know, I feel really bad about my buddies who got killed, but there's nothing in this world so far that has made me give a f*** about all the people that we killed over there, because I just can't afford to. I can't, I think I was even telling Frank that it just doesn't pay to give a f***. You got to be a callous f*** over there to live, and you got to be a callous f*** back here to live with what you live through.
What I try to do with my talks and with my work is I try to bring the reality home here, because I think that's the only way this war is ever going to end. Until people know the suffering that people are going through over there, they're not going to ever care. Back here, it's about a lot of, abstract ideology. It's about freedom and democracy and all this other shit. It's not about any of those things. When you look at the reality, these people are suffering, and it's because of us. There were no terrorists there before we got there. There were no insurgents before we got there. People lived in relative peace and harmony, and we've completely obliterated that. And it's going to be hell there for years to come. Even if we leave right now, we have screwed it up that bad. And doing stuff like this is my way of saying I'm sorry, you know, to the Iraqi people.
My name is Jason Hurd. I recently completed 10 years of honorable service to my country in both the U.S. Army and the Tennessee National Guard. One day we were on another dismounted patrol through the Kendi Street area. As is policy, we are to keep all cars and individuals away from our formation. And so a car was approaching us from the front. So I began doing my levels of aggression. I held up my hand, trying to get the car to stop. The car sped up. And I thought to myself, oh my God, this is it. This is someone who is trying to hurt us. And so instead of doing what I should have done according to policy and raising my weapon, Instead, I did what you should never do, and I took my hands off of my weapon altogether and began jumping up and down, waving my hands back and forth, trying to get this car to stop and see me. The car kept coming. And so I raised my weapon, and the car kept coming. I pulled my selector switch off of safe, and the car kept coming. I was applying pressure to my trigger, getting ready to fire on the vehicle. And out of nowhere, a man came off of the side of the road, flagged the car down, and got it to pull over. He walked around to the driver's side door, opened it up, and out popped an 80-year-old woman. Come to find out, this woman was a highly respected figure in the community, and I don't have a clue what would have happened had I opened fire on this woman. I would imagine a riot. If a foreign occupying force came here to the United States, and regardless of what they told us, whether they told us they were here to free us, to liberate us, and to give us democracy, do you not think that every person that owns a shotgun would not come out of the hills and fight for their right to self-determination?
Just empowering veterans to tell their stories, it is inherently anti-war to tell people what we went through, because no one could hear our stories and still support this.
The war is hurting America in its military. The war is hurting America in its young people. The war is hurting America economically. The war is hurting America on so many fronts that we would take years to list them all.
To me, the whole argument that like the war is bad because it's hurting America, or that it's hurting our readiness militarily, like that's not why I got involved with Winter Soldier. It seems like a major departure from the original vision of this, which for me is that the occupations are immoral.
I'm not against the war or occupations or whatever because it hurts America, because I don't think that's the main thing. I think that's what this testimony is about. It's going to show that the main people are getting hurt are in Iraq and Afghanistan.
I'm not saying I love war, but some of us do believe that whether or not we love war, war will come eventually. It's not this. They want to make it about this. They want to make Iraq the war for our country, and it's not.
There's been GI resistance as long as this country's had a military. The Revolutionary War, there's GI resistance. The Mexican-American War, there was GI resistance. That doesn't get taught to you in high school. You don't learn that one when you open up the history books. But there has been this long history of GI resistance that now I'm proud to be a part of.
There's a lot of talk in this country about listening to soldiers and, quote, supporting the troops. But when it really comes to listening to what we have to say about our experiences in Iraq, very few want to listen. As you may or may not have known, during the Siege of Fallujah, the Army openly admitted to using weapons that are banned by the Geneva Convention.
We're listening to selections from the web series, This Is Where We Take Our Stand. A longer documentary of that title will be broadcast by at least some PBS affiliates in January 2012. All the voices we've heard, male and female, have been of veterans of our Iraq and Afghanistan wars and occupations. These vets have focused on the harm we are doing to the civilians of the countries the U.S. military has invaded. But when you take normal young Americans and you train them to obey all orders, and then you order them and encourage them to commit war crimes upon innocent men, women, and children, it puts a tremendous strain upon the soldiers, too. Then there's the Pentagon's so-called stop-loss program. After his tour of duty ends, the soldier and the called-up National Guardsman often get sent back to combat for another tour of duty, and then another, and then maybe another. Few soldiers in any war can stand that much stress for that long. They crack. The Pentagon knows it. The Pentagon doesn't care. Soldiers are as expendable as the Iraqi and Afghani civilians they're sent to dominate. We'll hear a complete segment from the documentary on this problem. It's titled Broken Soldier. Here's what we'll hear. First, a veteran, a young woman, interviews a male veteran, Peter Goodman, prior to his public testimony. Then Goodman speaks at the 2008 Winter Soldier hearings. Then another veteran testifies, Christopher Goldsmith, once a sergeant, now a part-time pizza delivery boy. Both focus on the psychological damage these wars do to the American soldiers who have to fight them. Both speak of the large problem of soldier suicides, including their own attempted suicides. Last, we hear the testimony of the parents of soldier Jeffrey Lucy, who did kill himself. From the web series, This Is Where We Take Our Stand, here is the segment, Broken Soldier.
This is the questionnaire that we've developed just to kind of get a sense of what's been going on and where your testimony might be placed. But we have a lot of opponents that, you know, don't believe us.
Yeah.
And it's important that we are able to kind of catalog everything, and if there is any evidence or other people that can corroborate, this way we can stand up and say, you know what, no, it's just not just one person telling this story. It's not just two people telling this story. These are all the people telling this story. Did you ever participate in or observe the killing or wounding of a civilian or unarmed combatant?
Yes.
Is that something you can talk about?
No.
Have you ever seen mutilation of bodies?
Yes.
Can you talk about it?
No.
How prevalent was the use of racist or derogatory terminology towards civilians? If so, which terms?
Very prevalent. Haji, Sandigger, Camel Jockey, Ahmed, Ali. I mean, it's truly sad to see people in their darkest hour, isolated from everything that they've known, was taught to them, and loved. It's horrible to see how people operate outside of those things, because they have no value on themselves when they're placed in environments where the people have no value for them. I think a lot of good soldiers are going to keep taking orders. And I don't think that their orders that they want to take, and I don't think that they're going to do things that they want to do. But I think they're going to continue to do them until they're asked not to do them. This is destroying you and me, and it takes away any chance that we may have a normal functional lifestyle, because we've been reduced to living like animals. The first thing they tried to do was medicate me. No therapy was recommended, medications were recommended. They gave me three different medications. The first was trazodone, the second was Paxil, and the third was gabapentin, a generic form of Neurontin. My doctor told me that PTSD treatment is not a science, that there is no science to it, and that you can mix and match these medications, and something may work for you that doesn't work for another vet. And I did research on the medications that I was given, and I found out that the main side effect of all three medications is suicidal thoughts and suicidal tendencies. 10,000 Iraq war vets have committed suicide. My name is Zoli Peter Goodman. I'm a proud warrior and a prouder patriot. And that's my problem with the VA.
I'm from Belmore, a town in Long Island, New York, 20 minutes out of Manhattan. I could see the smoke when the towers fell on September 11th. I signed up as a forward observer, one of the most dangerous, powerful jobs in the military. My job was to go out and basically annihilate the enemy when we received contact. I joined the army to kill people. There was a little boy on an alleyway to my left on top of a building, and he was holding up a stick as if to mock having an AK-47, and he was pointing it at me, pretending to shoot. I positively identified my target. I trained my weapon on him and thought for a couple minutes. I hate these Iraqis. I hate these kids who throw rocks and bricks at me. This is my chance. I can kill this kid just to take one out of the couple million of them out. It took me a lot of thinking to not pull that trigger that day. I could have killed a 6-year-old boy. I could have killed someone's son. But I didn't. I believe myself to be strong. And after finding out I was stop lost, I started having panic attacks. And I couldn't admit that I was mentally or emotionally broken. After trying to kill myself, I was locked up and analyzed and saw doctors and this and that. And I was obviously a broken soldier, and I was still set to deploy. So I deliver pizzas on Wednesdays. That's what I am now, a pizza delivery boy. I was a sergeant. I was a leader. I was a very good soldier. But now I'm pizza delivery boy who works once a week, because that's the only job where I can call in a couple hours before and say, I'm still at the VA. I'm waiting in line. I'm sorry, I can't come in for a couple hours.
Jeffrey's death should never have happened. He was caught between the humanity of what he saw and what he had to do. My son was let down by the government, who sent him to fight their war of choice and destroyed his soul.
At about 11:30, Jeffrey asked me if he could just sit in my lap and I could rock him. We sat there for about 45 minutes and I was rocking Jeff, and we were in total silence. It was his last place of refuge. The next day I came home. It was about 7:15. I held Jeff one last time as I lowered his body from the rafters and untook the hose from around his neck.
After Jeffrey died, we found a note in the cellar. And it said, I am truly embarrassed of the man I became.
I am truly embarrassed of the man I became, and I hope you can try to remember me only as a child when I was happy, proud, and enjoyed life.
That's the end of the Broken Soldier segment. Let's end ourselves with one more voice, that of John Michael Turner. At the Winter Soldier hearings, Turner is showing slides and videos from his time in Iraq. The long volley of machine gun fire we'll hear is from a video showing Turner and his buddies, for no good reason, shooting up a mosque. Turner's story starts on a bad note, and then another, but ends on a note of hope. He apologizes to the Iraqis and affirms, I am no longer the monster that I once was.
Good afternoon. My name is John Michael Turner. I served with Kilo Company, 3rd Battalion, 8th Marines as an automatic machine gunner. On April 18th, 2006, I had my first confirmed kill. This man was innocent. I don't know his name. I called him the Fat Man. He was walking back to his house, and I shot him in front of his friend and his father. The first round didn't kill him after I had hit him up here in his neck area. And afterwards, he started screaming and looked right into my eyes. So I looked at my friend who I was on post with, and I said, well, I can't let that happen. So I took another shot and took him out. This is after one of the guys in the weapons company had gotten shot. This is a way that we would take out our aggression. There was no fire that was taken from that boss. It was shot into because we were angry. I just want to say that I am sorry for the hate and destruction that I have inflicted on innocent people. And I'm sorry for the hate and destruction that others have inflicted on innocent people. At one point, it was okay. But reality has shown that is not, and that this is happening, and that until people hear about what is going on with this war, it will continue to happen and people will continue to die. I am sorry for the things that I did. I am no longer the monster that I once was. Thank you.
We've been listening to parts of the video series, This Is Where We Take Our Stand. You'll find these 6 short videos at www.thisiswherewetakeourstand.com. And you may find the full documentary on your PBS TV station this January. You'll surely find our own website at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. On behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, this is Kenneth Doust advising Illegitimi non carborundum and ciao.
Sound off, should we light the fuse? Sound off, should we break the rules? We the ones with the light, and we got them in our sight. They the ones with a lot to lose.